Happy day. I'm Liza, your healing mentor. I used to say, all I need in life is for my kids to be happy and healthy. The problem was they weren't happy and they weren't healthy. Both my kids had anxiety, depression, and even Lyme disease. Then one day my daughter told her therapist, what would make me happy is if my mom was happy. So I went on a journey to find my own personal happiness. When I finally became happy, my own kids accelerated in their own healing journey. Now I share my stories, my mindset, and other inspirational healers with you. Let's heal one story at a time. Happy day. Question for you. How do you get yourself unstuck? It's like the million-dollar question right now because so many of us are struggling, moms in particular. And a lot of us feel like we kind of just have like this black cloud lingering over us. So where do you start? My guest today is, I swear he is the comeback kid. Ryan Severson is a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner who specializes in complex chronic illnesses like fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, and mold illness. He overcame all of this. And on top of that, he was battling some serious trauma as well as bankruptcy. So obviously with the medical pieces, there's so much medical work that needs to take place. But even more than that, there is a lot of emotional work that needs to take place as well. And that's what we dive into in this episode. Ryan talks about tending to your nervous system, living with passion, living with purpose, supporting yourselves. So much of the work is in our mindset and being accountable to our own personal empowerment. And best of all, Ryan is going to give you the tools and the best practices to get you to those happy days. This is Ryan's very happy story. Happy day. Welcome to Very Happy Stories, Ryan.
Thank you for having me, Liza. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. And I have to say, one of the things I love about the content that you put out is it's so empowering because there is so much that we can do. And there's so much that we can be accountable for in our own personal healing journey. And that's why I reached out to you and was so excited to have you on the podcast because I think we speak the same language of empowerment.
You know, I was talking before we started to hit play here. Yeah, I totally agree. And thank you for the kind feedback. You know, it doesn't have to be a sentence or anything like that. We can kind of make that mental shift. This can be transformative. And we have way more power than what a lot of people, than they really realize.
It's so true. It's so true. And I can't wait to unpack it. But why don't we start with, tell us a little bit about yourself and share a little bit more about your personal story.
I'm former like competitive athlete, grew up in Minnesota, just very, very into sports and athletics and got into some crazy stuff in high school. I had some traumatic things happen with me, like friends. One of my best friends had committed suicide and it was very, very traumatic to me.
So sorry.
Oh, thank you. It really had a big impact on me. And that was kind of one of like the first big shifts happened around my sophomore year. And a lot of things started shifting for me there. I actually kind of got into drugs and alcohol and I didn't really understand why I was doing it. But looking back, I know why. It was a coping mechanism for me. Got out of high school and could have played college hockey, but I wanted to get away from where I grew up. And so I joined the Marine Corps. Had an amazing time in the Marine Corps, met some amazing people, got to travel the world, got out. And then I started working for AT&T. It was in telecommunications, moved to Chicago. And was having a great time. I continued to play competitive ice hockey, constantly working out. I was like just a big workout nut. And then around 2010, I got really sick. Couldn't figure out what was going on with me. Did all the normal conventional medical doctors. I was told it was in my head. I was too stressed out. I was 35 at the time. And they had told me, well, this is, you know, you had a lot of surgeries from playing ice hockey and being in the Marine Corps. This is part of old age. And I was like, I don't think that waking up at 35 and taking 30 minutes to put your pants on because you're in so much pain, you're so inflamed is part of the aging process. So,
right. That's not it. You're not buying it.
No. So that, I went down the functional medicine path and they weren't really able to find a whole lot. Like my labs were always perfect. I was told my labs were like, you're the poster child of, you know, labs. Your blood sugar looks good. Your cholesterol, everything looked good. So I continued to search and eventually got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. At that point, it's actually, I went into one of the top teaching hospitals in the Chicago area and saw the head of their integrative medicine. And I brought this book to her called Surviving Mold. And I was like, you know, I think this is what I got going on with me. I go, we've had some water damage in my building. And, you know, this, everything in here is kind of really makes sense to me. And she looked at it and she said, no, I'm not going to run any of those labs. You have fibromyalgia. Here's a pamphlet. See you later. Yeah, totally. So I was like, all right. So that just, you know, continued searching, found a doctor of osteopathy. He had ran the labs and sure enough, mold came up as a problem. And I, at the time too, I had my, I had an environmental inspector come out and look at my condo. I'll never forget this. I was home in Minnesota for Thanksgiving and he called me on Thanksgiving actually. And he's like, hey, and I was like, wow, you're calling on me on Thanksgiving. He's like, you're not in your home right now, are you? I'm like, no. He's like, good. Do not go back to it.
Why?
He said, your levels of Stachybotrys and black mold is off the charts. He's like, people die living in mold levels like that.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy because, I mean, this is how crazy I got. Like I could start smelling it. Your nervous system gets overreacted to it. And I could smell like a musty smell. And I was walking around my condo, like sniffing my outlets to see if I could smell in the cavity of the wall. And my parents thought I was crazy. All my friends thought I was crazy. The weird thing is that my roommate was living with me and he was completely fine. And so that's why, you know, I was like starting to question my own sanity. But when I got that back, I was like, okay. So I ended up trying to remediate my home, spent like $15,000. Come to find out that the unit below me was full of mold, that was foreclosed. There was nobody living there. So it's like, if you're not going to fix that unit, there's no sense in us moving forward with yours. So I ended up walking away from my home, let it go into foreclosure. At the same time, I had five investment properties. They were kind of going under during the 2008, like housing and all that. So I was trying to stay afloat. Needless to say, it was like a perfect storm of stress and chaos. And so I walked away and ended up having to file bankruptcy. It was probably the best decision I ever made because it was allowing me to start from new and I didn't have to deal with that. After getting out of my house, I started feeling a little bit better, but then had started having a lot of other issues and couldn't figure out what it was. So it was chasing things for the next year and a half before I finally got diagnosed with Lyme disease. And then that was like when everything clicked for me. I'm like, okay, now I know what I'm going up against. And I went in and did 7 years of research and bouncing around from practitioner to practitioner, piecing things together. And then in 2016, I finally was put into remission and I never looked back. And in the process, I just learned and discovered my passion for helping others along the way in different Lyme groups and things like that and became certified coach. And that's what I do now.
Holy cow. Oh my goodness. How many years did it take once you finally got the diagnosis? How long did it take for you to reach remission from Lyme, mold, fibromyalgia, all of that?
So it's probably about 7 years total. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So physically, it's not working out for you. Financially, it's not working out for you. Emotionally, it's not working out for you. I can only imagine that this spurred a transformation for you because the person I'm talking today is, you know, fit and healthy, and now you coach others. Tell us a little bit about that transformation. How did you get there?
Yeah, so that was a huge turning factor for me, really, because at the time, like, you know, with the house going into foreclosure, actually, my first fiance, we ended up splitting up. So we had that going on. So it was like another stressor. And
yes, that happens. That's not uncommon.
Yeah.
For your relationship to take a toll.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, playing a big, big part of me. And we'll talk about this in a moment, but I like struggled with anxiety and depression for most of my life as well. Yeah, the transformation piece, like I felt like there was like this black cloud following me everywhere. Like, why is all this stuff happening to me? I was like in that victim mode and
Yes.
like, woe is me. Like, I'm a good person. I'm nice to people. I'm giving. Like, why is all this bad stuff happening to me? You know, and I was focusing on all the physical aspects of Lyme disease, like detoxification, adrenal fatigue, which we'll talk about, going after the bugs, and all these other things that I was
in. So like kill phase treatments,
yes.
These antibiotics, kill herbs. Okay. Yes. That takes a toll too.
Yep. So, you know, it was all about kill and focusing on the body. And then, you know, one of my friends gave me this personal development CD set and I started listening to it. And that was kind of when things started to shift and change for me on a mental emotional aspect. Cause I was probably at that time, that was probably 3-4 years into my, maybe a little bit long, maybe like 4 or 5 years into my journey.
Okay.
And I was stuck at like that 70-75% range. And
yes.
I just went over the hump. It was like, I push myself, I come back, I push myself, come back.
When you're kind of living in flares where you'll be okay. And then something can happen and then it'll just take you out for a month or two and then you rebuild. And that's a very common place to be people that have chronic Lyme.
Yep. And I'll never forget reading Steven Buhner. He's like, whenever you start to feel better with Lyme, don't go out and start doing things like you used to, because you're going to end up crashing. And it took me like 10 times of doing that. Cause like, I just wanted to get back into the gym. I wanted to play hockey again. I want to do this. And as soon as I had like those, like if I had 2 days in a row where I felt good, like, let's get back in the gym. And I would push myself for like a week. And then I would, like you said, I'd be laid up for another couple of weeks or a couple of months. And then it was just this constant cycle. And I'm like, all right, something needs to change.
Yes.
So I got it. Yeah. I did the personal development thing. And I just started to realize the power of our mind and our thoughts. And I started to realize how much negativity was in my life, like how I grew up, like a lot of pessimism, a lot of like negativity. Started looking into that. And that's at that same time is when I made the shift to like, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to school to be a naturopathic doctor. I started going and getting like my chemistry stuff, all that knocked out. And that like, I connected to my purpose. I realized like, this is my calling in life, is to help people. And the fact of like shifting my mindset and finding my purpose and being in alignment with my calling was like, it took me from 70 to 75% to like 90% in the course of a couple months. And it was like this huge cloud lifted off of me. And I started seeing things differently. I started stop focusing on the negative. I started seeing the positive. And it was like a total shift. And that's when I met my wife. Like just like serendipitously, just all this thing just started to take place for me.
I love that. You know what I call that, Ryan? I call that catching the flow of alignment. And you had used that word because I mentor moms too. And that's what we all want to experience when you catch the flow. But so much of it stems from the mindset, right? And gratitude and seeing the positive, because I've realized that all of these things just keep building on each other. It's kind of like that game where like my family plays this all the time. But you know, when you see a Volkswagen Beetle or buggy, it's like slug bug or punch buggy. And when you play that game, which my family plays, it's so annoying. There's like these Volkswagen buggies everywhere because you're looking for it. You know, you're seeking it out. And when you live in a mindset of gratitude and positivity, you're just going to see more of it. Sounds cheesy, but it's true.
It's very true. There's actually a scientific basis to it too. It's the reticular activating system. So that's a part of our brain. So because our conscious mind can only filter in so much information at a time, it's like single digits, but our subconscious is pulling in millions of bits of data constantly. And it's just like you said, with the slug bug. So reticular activating system. So if you're like, I'm going to buy a blue Honda, the blue Hondas were always on the road, but you never saw them because they weren't important to you. But when you program your mind, you start researching, I want this blue Honda, you go and start looking at them. Now you've programmed in your subconscious mind that this is something important. And so when that data gets filtered in from the outside, your subconscious taps on you like it's there. And all of a sudden you see these blue cars, the slug or the bugs everywhere. So
yes, totally. So let's talk about emotional health and the role it plays into physical health. You had talked about, I don't know what percentage you said, but it's like you got to 70% recovery and, you know, you just couldn't get over that hump. So let's talk about the emotional connection to physical health.
Yeah. So the mind-body connection is so, so powerful, and the emotions come play and they play into it a lot. And this is something that I've really learned and I continue to learn through my work with nervous system and understanding myself more about the power of emotions is that, you know, growing up, I stuffed all my emotions away. I stuffed my anger away. I never really would allow myself to feel my emotions, and emotions are energy in motion. And if we don't allow them to process, they build up. I like to use the analogy of like a dam. Your emotions are the water going down the river. When we suppress our emotions by scrolling on social media, emotional eating, drugs or alcohol, like binge watching TV and anything to avoid those emotions, we put a dam in that stream and that flow, and then they start to build up and it builds up pressure. And those emotions are trying to send a message or tell us something. And if we don't listen, it just gets louder and louder. And then they'll start expressing themselves as physical symptoms. Pain, anxiety, depression, all these different things, which really, really impact our ability to heal on an energetic level.
Makes sense. Yeah. Your body is signaling to you, take a look at this.
Yes.
Right. And the more you don't listen, the louder your body becomes. So yeah, I was just shaking my head. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Lived it, know it, breathe it. Yeah. Uh-huh. I know that you talk so much about the nervous system. Were you going to be going there before I interrupted you?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, but the nervous system is such a huge aspect. Like Stephen Porges, he was the discoverer of the polyvagal theory, says whenever there's a feeling change, there's a nervous system change. So if you go from joy and happiness to feeling anxiety, that's not just an emotional change, there's a nervous system change. So you're moving away from your rest, digest, social, engaged circuit, moving into a fight or flight circuit. And then if you were to shift from anxiety, depression, now you're shifting from that fight or flight and you're moving into that free shutdown, which would be like the dorsal vagal activity. And there's different symptoms that are associated with different stages of the nervous system. And then there's different emotions as well. So we can learn a lot about where we're at with emotions. This is something I try to help my clients learn a lot. Like, let's become aware of our emotions, and we look at where they are on the nervous system spectrum. We call it the nervous system ladder. Deb Dana, she's a big proponent of this. She created the polyvagal ladder theory. So the rest, digest, socially connected, that's like from our heart up. So there's that heart center, that heart connection between our brain and our nervous system. And then we go to fight or flight. That's more the spinal sympathetic activation. And then when we go to the dorsal activation, that's going to be more the lower portion of your spine. And that's how we kind of like function. If you go from connected to somebody, you're feeling happy and joyful. And then all of a sudden you sense a threat, you get ready to run or you get ready to fight. And then if that threat seems too overwhelming, you shift down into that dorsal or shutdown. And then that's where everything starts to go down. And when you're working with people with Lyme disease and fibromyalgia, I find they're stuck in that shutdown, and they bounce and oscillate between shutdown and fight or flight, and they don't get to that socially engaged rest digest area of the nervous system enough, which is where healing takes place. Because in the other threatened states or survival states, it's very, very hard for our body to repair itself.
Oh my gosh, that makes perfect sense. When I even think about the healing journey of my kids, I see them being, in the past, stuck in fight or flight. And then that lower level, what did you call that piece?
It's like the freeze or shutdown or like
the shutdown. Mm-hmm. Yes. So obviously through the healing journey, I think they've been able to get up to that higher level of like the joy. This must have been the work that you had to do to get over that last hump, tending to your nervous system, tending to your emotions. So can you talk a little bit about the things that you actually had to do or to practice or to change your lifestyle about? Like, let's unpack some of that.
Yeah.
What's the roadmap?
Yeah. So you mentioned one of the things earlier about gratitude, like having that attitude of gratitude. That was a big thing. I started journaling. So I did meditation early on, and that was a very, very huge thing for me. But it also brought up a lot of like trauma and anxiety that I had no idea was buried deep, deep within my nervous system and subconscious. This is something that some people, like if you've experienced trauma in the past, it can surface when you do like deep meditation. And that's what happened to me. And I didn't know what was going on. I was having insane like anxiety and like acting out, like just like I didn't know what was going on. And I was like, well, is it the bugs? Is it this? Is it that? And later to find out that it was trauma and working through trauma, this is stuff I still continue to work through as the layers start to, you know, peel mm-hmm. away. It's really having like a daily routine for me was like getting up, steps, putting my feet on the ground, grounding, taking a deep breath of fresh air in and just tell myself it's going to be a good day. Whatever happens, it's happening for me, not to me. What can I learn from this? And then it would be like a meditation practice. I got into Wim Hof early on. So that's like really big for the nervous system. So I got into him probably in 2014. And so I added breath work into my daily practice, doing cold showers. And for someone who's stuck in a fight or flight state, like cold showers, even cold, like if you're feeling really triggered or anxious, you can just splash cold water on your face. You can run a rag under cold water and put it on your neck, on your vagus nerve. And that can instantly, within 16 seconds is what the research shows, it can shift you out of that fight or flight state and into a more parasympathetic state. And so using simple tools like that to bring your nervous system back into a more regulated state. Journaling was really big for me. Gratitude journaling, there's all kinds of research showing the positivity that gratitude changes the shifts within our biochemistry as well. So those are the big things for me. And then as I'm sure you're aware too, like in the whole process of Lyme and chronic illness, you become very isolated.
True.
You know, I stopped going out with friends because I didn't have the energy to do it. You know, after, you know, years of them asking me to do things, they kind of, you know, the calls and the invitations kind of stopped coming. And at that time too, so I went back to school and I was socializing more and seeing more people, and all those things started to help me regulate my nervous system and bring us back to, bring me back to a more like that rest, digest, social engagement.
Yes, it's kind of like the joy and the passion. So you are in an isolated place. My family was in an isolated place for a long time. And because you're going through a really hard time, right? And, you know, especially for moms, you put up these mama bear walls and you're kind of in isolation, kind of as like a protective mechanism too. And there's a lot of questions that you don't want to attend to. However, you do then lose connectivity and you're deprived of the friendships and the joy and these other experiences. And so I know when my daughter was finally able to go back to school, and we even moved to a different state, but she went back to school with kids that were similar to her because she got into this very unique program and a unique charter school. I saw her recovery hop over that 70%.
Yeah.
So it's like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You know, you want to be joyful and have these experiences and socialize. But then there's a point where you like, you have to put yourself out there in that place. And just as like you went back to school too and pursued a passion, it's like things like that, that are going to pop you over that 70%.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
I love that. And another thing I wanted to add when you were talking about regulation is one thing I saved in some content that you created was box breathing.
Yes.
That was so simple. Can you just share that real quick? Because it's something that everybody could do that I started implementing.
Yeah, it's a very, very simple exercise to bring in. It was actually popularized by the Navy SEALs. So they would do it to calm themselves.
Well, if it's good enough for the Navy SEALs, it's good enough for me.
So I learned this from Mark Devine. He's like SEAL fit. He was a former SEAL and he trains people for the SEAL teams and different things. And so basically what it is just, you know, sitting down and it's a four count. You breathe in for a count of four. I like to think about it like the box moving. So you're breathing in for a count of four. You hold your breath for a count of four.
Yep.
You exhale for a count of four. And then you hold your breath for a count of four. And that's one box that you've created. And so It's really simple. You can do it for 20 rounds or you can do it for timing. And that's going to start to calm your nervous system down, reduce your stress levels, and bring you back into that more ventral vagal, which is that socially connected, grounded, parasympathetic state.
Totally works. I think you made a real, and thank you so much for that because I definitely started using that.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about fatigue. I know a lot of moms and listeners hit fatigue, especially like a certain time of our day, whether you have Lyme or fibromyalgia or not. You know, a fatigue is something that we can all struggle with. I know I've been told that I was in adrenal fatigue and had been given some supplements for clearing out my adrenal fatigue. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective on fatigue?
The adrenal fatigue thing, this is something that that was like one of the first things actually that I found before I ever even knew I had Lyme. Like I found an article talking about adrenal fatigue and they talked about all the symptoms I'm having, like, oh, this has got to be adrenal fatigue. So I was doing all the things for adrenal fatigue, your adaptogenic herbs, like desiccated adrenal supplements and things like that. And they could be helpful in certain aspects, but when it comes to adrenal fatigue and fatigue, there's a lot of things that we need to think about. The first thing is going to be the work from Dr. Robert Navio on cell danger response. And this really explains the whole thing of fatigue. And this is based around the mitochondria. So the mitochondria, if you guys remember from science class, they're these little organelles inside of your cells. And we average about 2,000 per cell, but there's a high concentration in your muscles, your heart, your liver, and your brain. And so when the mitochondria produce, which is what is ATP, it's like our fuel or our electricity that gives us our energy. But what Dr. Robert Navio was able to discover is that they don't just produce energy, they also monitor our systems for threats. And when they sense a threat in the body, it could be inflammation, oxidative stress, psychological stress, toxins, infections. They switch from producing energy and they go into defense mode. And so what happens is the cell shuts down. So if you think about it, like, you know, so you live in Florida, you have a hurricane coming.
Yeah.
This is like the cell sensing danger. When we know the hurricane's coming, we board up our doors, we put the sandbags around the home, and we either hunker down and we are not going to get food. We're not going to leave the house and nobody's coming in until it's gone. And then once the threat is gone, we can take that stuff down. Well, that's what your cells are doing in a cell danger response.
Wow.
And a big thing is the psychological stress can be that stressor too. So if we're constantly living in that state of psychological stress, our cells or our mitochondria constantly think we're in a state of stress. So they start to downregulate energy, not to mention when you're in that fight or flight, it's like you're putting your foot on the gas, but you're in neutral and you're not going anywhere and you're ripping through fuel and now you're just totally exhausted. And so that's where, like, really when it comes down to fatigue is going to be more of a mitochondrial thing as it's a drainer on that. And then there's also something I like to add to that. I got this from Alex Howard, who's a chronic fatigue syndrome sufferer, recoverer, and he owns the Optimal Health Clinic in the UK. He came up with a formula. It says genetics plus personality patterns times your load equals the impact on your body system. And that's kind of like how you decode your fatigue. So some of us are genetically more susceptible to certain issues. But then we throw in our personality patterns, and there's 5 personality patterns that are very draining. And I think these will kind of resonate with some.
Wow. I'm fascinated. I'm just so fascinated. I mean, first of all, you're so well-informed. You must read a lot. You research a lot. You must be listening to a lot of podcasts. I mean, you're just one of these people that is just has been a student of this for so long. So, and I do want you to share those 5 personality yep. types mm-hmm. you were going to, but it sounds like to me, if I'm understanding correctly, that it's not necessarily your adrenals being fatigued so much as it that your cells are being stressed, your mitochondria being stressed, which makes perfect sense. And actually, Dr. Bill Rawls, who has written the book on Unlocking Lyme, and he has a cellular wellness book out, he actually talks a lot about this too. So it's not new to me, but I just kind of didn't connect it to, you know, what people were terming as adrenal fatigue. So yes, please go on. Tell us about the five personality types.
I'll go to the five personality things. I just want to kind of just say one more thing about adrenal fatigue. So if we think about it, what cortisol actually does is when we're stressed, cortisol, which is produced in the adrenals and adrenaline, they get released under stress to produce energy in the form of ATP. But what happens is the cortisol comes out and your liver will release stored glucose or sugar for quick energy. And so it's not, cortisol's not producing energy. It's an anti-inflammatory and it's helping regulate blood sugar. So they did research, and I think there was 59 studies looking at people with burnout, chronic fatigue syndrome, and other fatigue-related issues. And what they found was there was 15 studies that showed a very, very small decrease in cortisol levels in those with chronic fatigue issues, but it was not statistically significant. So it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. And then they had 11 studies that showed that the people with chronic fatigue actually had a slightly elevated level of cortisol. Then there's 33 studies that showed that there's absolutely no change in cortisol levels. So that kind of like, it's not the adrenals that's causing the energy issue. It's the lack of energy produced by the mitochondria, and you have mitochondria in your adrenals. So if they're being having issues too, that's going to impact us as well. So I just kind of wanted to bring that.
Thank you. I feel like I'm a student right now and I'm learning so much. So I love that. Okay. Thank you so much. So yeah, please continue about the different personality types.
Okay, so we have the five personality types that tend to be very draining are the overachiever. So this is somebody that I hit all of these myself. So this is somebody whose self-worth is based on what they do and what they achieve. This is totally me. There's the perfectionist, which I'm also that are tightly, closely related to that overachiever. So it's like try to create safety and be accepted by those around us by being perfect. And it just creates this stress pattern. Then there's the helper, the people pleaser. So we're always putting others' needs before ours, even when that jeopardizes what we need emotionally, physically, mentally. Then there's the anxiety or worrier. And this is somebody who's seeing the world as a constant threat, and they're constantly looking for safety and they can't find it. So they're hypervigilant. Then there's the controller, which is very tightly connected to the anxiety person. This is somebody who tries to control their environment to feel safe. And really what it comes down to is the two basic human needs are the need to feel loved and the need to feel safe. Yep. And so we will create these personality patterns due to maybe modeling from our parents. Or for me, like my parents were well-intentioned, but they always like, you know, I'd have a great hockey game and be like, oh yeah, you played well, but you should have did this, or why didn't you do that? And it was like, okay. So in my mind, at a very young age, I learned that I wasn't worthy unless I was perfect or unless I did this. And I didn't start unraveling this stuff until recently. And I see it consistently in the people that I work with struggling with fatigue, is that these particular emotional or personality patterns are pretty prevalent.
Yep. I think I hit at least four of those. I know my own kids, I'm like thinking of my own family members. So that makes perfect sense. And you know, something that I realized when you were talking about the adrenal fatigue and your cells feeling stressed and, here it is, feeling threatened.
Yes.
I think this is really common with moms who have neurodivergent children. When you have this kid with ADHD, or they might, you know, have autism, you as a mom start to feel threatened just because there are all these social norms, right? And your kid's outside of these social norms. So just watching a kid who might not even be diagnosed yet, go living through these experiences at a young age, can put moms into a fatigued place. And it all makes sense now when you were talking about it's about feeling threatened. Yeah. And no one's threatening you, but you've just been so programmed from society that like, oh my gosh, we're not safe because I'm feeling judged. I'm feeling shame. And all of that kind of comes into play with this mitochondrial stress.
Yes. Yes, totally. And that kind of comes back to the nervous system too. So the nervous system connection with the mitochondria, the threat is very important as well. And kind of what we were talking about earlier too, with like co-regulation.
Yes. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. You said empathic. So like moms feeling the pain of their kids and being empathic like that, which then impacts their nervous system. But the beautiful thing is when us as parents, that's what our children are learning to manage emotions and regulate their nervous system based on what we do. And so if we can try to calm them and soothe them, even when we're feeling dysregulated, if we can find anything, box breathing, splashing cold water in our face, bring ourselves into a more regulated state and being around our kids, that co-regulation is shared with them, which then helps to soothe their nervous system to bring them back into a more parasympathetic safety state as well.
Yes, I could not agree more. So before we started our conversation, Ryan and I were just chit-chatting and we just talked about, just for a frame of reference, that when we live this high-intensity parenting life with kids that have learning disabilities or are neurodivergent or have Lyme or PANS, now we're both operating from a intense place. And we're both operating from a place of dysregulation. Mm-hmm. So Ryan had brought up, you know, this need to co-regulate. And I had never heard of that term, but I speak to it a lot too. And so you have to start the process of co-regulating. The mom, the parents, the caregiver, you start that pattern of, okay, I'm going to calm down my nervous system. And in doing so, you model that to your child. But at the same time, because we are so empathic with these highly sensitive children, they can feel that regulation.
Yes, definitely. And one like trick parents could do and moms can do, anybody that's dysregulated, if you have like an anchoring system, which can be who, what, where, and when, we think about times in our lives that we felt safe, we felt love, we felt connected. It could be a person, it could be a place, it could be a vacation, it could be a time in your life. And then our children have those times too, where they felt like really connected and happy. And so if you can have that, like almost like you can either store it in your mind or you have it like on your phone or whatever, like when you're feeling regulated and you come up and it's like, oh, that vacation we did when we went to Cancun, like, oh, it felt so amazing. Because the power of visualization and having that memory instantly takes you back to that shifts your biochemistry, moves you out of that stress state and bringing you back into that more regulated and rest digest state.
Yes, I think there is huge power in visualization and kind of bringing yourself back to that place. I always too, with my children and with some of the moms that I mentor, there's always parts in our day or in our week that we know are going to be stressful. Maybe it's when your kid has to go to piano lesson or whatever. You're going in for a blood draw. And I will preemptively visualize that episode running very smooth, right? And just being very seamless and in flow. And it brings down my own nervous system so that when we do get to that place, I've kind of like reprogrammed my nervous system a little bit. Anyway, for what it's worth, it's actually super helpful to visualize things going smoothly too.
Totally agree. It's like the power of intention, like having that intention. And there's actually Lynn McTaggart wrote a book called The Attention Experiment, where she actually talks about, and there's done studies where like the power of prayer and intention not only can change things as they are presently, but they actually can change things in the past when you get into whole quantum physics and aspects of
yes.
it. I don't want to like totally nerd out about this, but like I'm a huge Joe Dispenza fan. And like Lynn McTaggart and really getting into like quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and how we really us, we're co-creators and we have the power with our mind and our nervous system is our connection to our source, be that God or universe or whatever that may be for you or your higher self, that really we can change our physical matter with the power of our intention. That was another thing where I learned through the personal development aspect that really shifted things for me, because I realized that I wasn't a victim and I had the power. And when you realize that and take 100% ownership of everything in your life, it's freeing, and it just really allows you to, you know, be that person that can take charge and make changes.
It's so true. Just like what I said at the beginning, and that's where so much of your work resonates with me, because it is about personal empowerment, but really that big step is accountability. Mm-hmm. And being accountable, sometimes it can be triggering for people to hear, because they start to think that you're saying it's your fault. And it's kind of different things. But what do you say to that when you have a client or someone you're working with say, "So I'm to blame"? What's your response?
That is a very touchy thing. And it's really not, like, it all comes down to awareness. And if you're not aware that, like, and this was a big thing, because I'll never forget this too. This is a conversation when I was still dealing with Lyme. I started dating and I went out on a date with this woman, and we were having breakfast, and I was telling her, like, "Oh, probably shouldn't have been sharing this on a date," but because I've been in 10 car accidents and 2 motorcycle accidents, and I was kind of sharing with her, I'm like, "Oh, I have all this stuff that's happened to me." And she's like, "Oh, you must have been a bad person to have all that karma." And I always thought karma was that, you know, if you do people bad, but karma is actually comes down to your own personal thoughts and your energy that you put out in the world. So if you're constantly beating yourself up, which is what I did, I was very negative on myself, I would attract more situations in my life that would do that. Now, nobody is saying, "Hey, give me Lyme disease," or give my kids Lyme disease, or PANS or PANDA or autism. And so that can be a difficult situation to think about, but not everything can be created that way. But we have that power through intention and really, really connecting with that to take that personal ownership. And that was kind of like a big shift for me, because I did actually have, I had to move 3 times in the course of 6 weeks, because I moved into a place out of place with mold, moved into another place with mold, and then had to move again. And I was living there. We had water flood the unit, and I was freaking out. And this is like that whole black clouds following me. And then I'm
yes,
like, everything's going to be okay. And I'm like putting that intention out there. This is going to be taken care of. Everything's going to be good. And it was, they remediated, everything was fine. And that was kind of like a big changing factor for me. So it is kind of a touchy thing, because nobody's wants to be sick and nobody wants to have these situations happen to them. But there's a formula that Jack Canfield came up with, and he's like a success guy. It says events plus E plus R equals all. So there's the event, which we have no control over. Then there's our response, which we have 100% control over, which then equals the outcome. So being that we have the event plus our response, and then the outcome is the sum of those, our response gives us the opportunity to shift and change that outcome.
Love it. Love it. Yes. Well, why don't you tell everybody about what you do today?
I still meditate daily. Exercise is really huge for me. I still exercise daily. I do breath work. It could be Wim Hof or box breathing or some other types of breathing work. I do cold ice baths probably 3-4 times a week. That's been a really big thing for me. Journaling, continuing to just work through different emotional stuff, constantly learning. So those are big things. But yeah, my daily thing is meditation, exercise, like daily walks. I wear blue blocking glasses at night to limit the blue light toxicity that we experience. I try to get sunlight first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Because when we go back to that energy thing, some of the biggest things, so, you know, without having to spend a lot of money on supplements or anything like that to help trying to recover your health, if you can get in and fix your circadian rhythm by blocking blue light at night, getting sunlight in the morning, trying to get outside. Like, I know working moms and working people, it's hard because we're working inside, but if you can get outside for lunch and just take a 5-10 minute walk in the sun, it changes our hormones, it upregulates everything, and it has a major, major impact on the mitochondria. And if you're not able to get that, you can do things like red light therapy. That's another thing I do probably 3-4 times a week, because these things help to upregulate mitochondrial production and protect them. I take about 20 milligrams of melatonin every night. Melatonin is super protective of the mitochondria, especially under stress. And so that can be like a miracle molecule. There's a book called that by John Laurence, and it talks about all the amazing things that melatonin does. So those are some of the things I do on a daily basis, along with like, you know, proper hydration and all that.
It's a lifestyle. It sounds like it's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you are also a practitioner too.
I work mostly with people that are dealing with mold, fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, other chronic illnesses. I have multiple options that I work with clients. So I do a couple of group programs. I have one that just came out with that was been a really hit. We just launched it last month. It was called Break Free Vagus. So I would dive deep into all this stuff. And I partnered with one of my mentors and coaches, Lita Sportel. She's a psychologist. And we worked through talking about the nervous system, heart coherence, quantum mechanics, and really helping people understand that nervous system and creating simple daily tools that people can add into your day to improve your nervous system. Like gargling after you brush your teeth in the morning, or like visualization. These things that activate the vagus nerve, breath work, meditation. And we do a lot of things in there. And it's like, it's a great program with a tool done for you, scheduling to get that into your day. I run that about every 2 to 3 months. Break Free Mind is something where I work through clients in a group format that is working more on the mental, emotional, and trauma aspect of things. Mm-hmm. Looking at like 11 different root causes that can kind of contribute to anxiety, depression, fatigue, chronic illness, all that. And then I have my flagship program where I work with people, which is called Freedom from Fatigue and Pain. And that's where it's kind of like all that. So we're looking at labs, we're doing diet, we're doing, you know, detoxification and all that stuff. So I work with people on those different aspects.
And this is through Zoom?
All telemedicine, labs are shipped at home, or blood draws can be done. I just send the stuff to clients and they can do that too, and just take it to their lab core.
That's amazing. Amazing. And if we'll put everything in the show notes, but if people wanted to reach out to you, where's the best place to connect with you?
The best place to find me is on Instagram at Ryan_Severson. That's where I'm most active. I am active on Facebook under Ryan Severson. I'll be doing more there. I'm just about to open up a Facebook group that's going to be all about, it's called The Secrets to a Sublime Life. And it's going to be a lot of trainings, a lot of information, and positive community to help people create more energy and have a better life so they can really get back to being in alignment, like we talked about earlier, and having that life that they want. And then I do have a website. It's yoursublimelife.com. So people can check me out there as well.
Great. Oh my gosh, Ryan, you're probably one of the most informed people I've ever interviewed. The fact that you always are referencing, what I love about the way your mind works is you're always referencing back to a book, you know, with the author name, with this study, and this person is the person that founded this. I mean, you do a lot of reading and research, and it shows. And you're also so passionate about what you do and this topic. And I am so grateful that you came on the podcast and shared your story and all of this wealth of information and knowledge today. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. It's been an honor to be here. And thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for listening. If you felt inspired, please submit a review. More reviews help others find Very Happy Stories. And don't forget to subscribe and share this with someone else you know who could use a very happy story right about now. Until next time, have a happy day.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer.
And we are the host of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com
and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.